You're on board for this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. More than a million people live in the Omaha Council Bluffs metropolitan area in western Iowa, eastern Nebraska. My guest this half hour is an Iowa historian, Troy Stolpe. He loves to recall the fascinating history of what is now the Omaha Council Bluffs area. In fact, his passion for this topic has led him to give dozens of presentations about it, and so we've invited him into our program today to give us a few highlights, tell us a few stories from the past that may make you drive when you drive through the Omaha Council Bluffs area, think about it in a different way. Troy Stolpe is a historian, a teacher at Lewis Central High School in Council Bluffs. Welcome to our program, Troy.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Ben.
We have about 20 or so minutes to have you give us some highlights, a condensed version of your passion here in talking about the history of the area. What do we need to know about the prehistory of this area to start? Where do you jump in?
Well, I always jump in at the school that I work at, the Lewis Central High School, when they were creating a middle school in 1975, they discovered an ossuary from the late archaic period, and it is a very unique site. It's the only one in the area, the only one in the state from roughly 2,800 years ago, and it had a number of different bodies buried in it, prehistoric Native Americans, not directly related to any of the modern tribes that we know today. And what they would have is the group that put the bodies there would break up during the winter time and go in their small bands. And so when their dead would die, they would put them in a bag and then carry them until the whole group met up again in the spring. And then they would bury them together in a ceremony and with several artifacts. And, you know, it's a funny story because someone would actually be responsible for carrying the dead, you know, dead Aunt Sally around for the, you know, if she died in November, they'd have to carry dead Aunt Sally around until, you know, the following May. So, you know, it's kind of a funny story that I can't get my 14-year-old to take out the garbage, let alone, you know, have him cart around the remains of his, you know, of his dead relatives. So that's always where I jump in.
Okay. Well, because we're in fast forward mode here, given the time that we have here, let's talk about the juncture. Before the Europeans came, what must it have been like? Imagine that. Help us imagine that. Was it peaceful or warlike in this area? What was the level of technology? Was there farming going on?
It was more of a riverine situation. After the peoples that I had talked about at Lewis Central, they were gone by around 900 A.D.
Gone where?
Nobody knows. There's no more record of their existence in the area that has been found thus far. So then you have another what's called the Nebraska culture. And on both sides of the Missouri River, both in this area, both in the Bellevue vicinity, which is up roughly a couple of miles south of Omaha, and southwest of Council Bluffs, you have the remains of earth lodges, and then also on the Iowa side in Glenwood, which is roughly just east of Bellevue, on just across the river, you also have some remains of earth lodges from that time period. And of course, you have stone tools, animal tools, you have the typical skins. The Nebraska phase was judged by its appearance in time, which was roughly 980 to 1380. And there are still remains that can be seen in this area. So if anyone is traveling to this area, they could find it in Fontenelle Forest or in Glenwood, and they could check out the earth lodges here.
Let's jump forward a few hundred years. When do Europeans enter the picture? We have, of course, Lewis and Clark, the expedition right at the start of the 1800s, but European fur trappers were there before that, right?
That is correct. There were a couple from the Spanish that just passed through. And again, the whole idea of the explorers, there was an age of explorers first, people that just passed through. The first one that we know that got to this area for sure was a Frenchman by the name of Etienne Bourmont, who was here roughly in 1715. He made it to the mouth of the Platte River. Now, that's documented. The chances, he was living with native tribes at the time and was making contact up the Missouri, which was the interstate, if you will, at the time, for native tribes. And it's highly unlikely that he stopped at the mouth of the Platte, got there and said, well, I've gone far enough, and turned around.
Yeah.
That, however, in his journal, that's as far north as he happened to mark down that he went. And there were also, there was another couple of people called the Millay brothers, and Pierre and Paul, and they were trying to find a path to Santa Fe. And in 1739, they went up the Missouri River looking for Santa Fe, what would become New Mexico, and just went the wrong direction. They got as far north as south, what is today South Dakota. Some native tribes, you know, told them of their plight and turned them around, but they certainly got through the area. And then, of course, you get Lewis and Clark in 1804.
Right. And so when did the European entrance into this picture really start to change things in a significant way? The 1800s into the 1850s, by the end of the 1800s, completely changed, right?
Oh, certainly. Lewis and Clark coming into the area, the name Council Bluff was originated because Lewis and Clark passed what is today's Fort Atkinson, which is roughly 10 miles north of Omaha Council Bluffs, and they held their famous meeting with the Oto and the Missouri there. And after that meeting, the whole area between what is today's Plattsmouth and Fort Atkinson, or Fort Calhoun today, was known as Council Bluff, the whole Missouri River Valley in that area, until the time of 1853, when the Mormons left the Council Bluffs and Omaha area and adopted the name Council Bluffs. So it's, you know, quite an expansive, tale with several different groups. The micro history here fitting very nicely into the macro history. I just mentioned that the Mormons left in 1848, and they were a big part of the development of Council Bluffs, which was, they really created the town, which was, they called Canesville. They created it, and they also had a settlement on the west side of the Missouri River in what is today's North Omaha, and that was called Winter Quarters until they left and went to Salt Lake City in 1848.
If you've just joined us, Troy Stolp is my guest this half hour. He's a historian, also a teacher at Lewis Central High School in Council Bluffs. Loves to give talks about the history of the Omaha Council Bluffs area, what he calls a symbiotic history of Omaha and Council Bluffs. So we're getting some highlights here. And I wanted, Troy, to make sure, but we have about 10 minutes left. I wanted to make sure we get into this fascinating story I know you like to tell and talk about. It is fascinating. And if it's, you know, if Iowa is on any trivia game boards or questions out there, this would be one of them, which is what part of Iowa is the only city that is west of the Missouri River? And that would be, Troy?
That would be Carter Lake, Iowa.
Carter Lake, Iowa. I have it called up on my screen, Google Maps here. It is really amazing. Carter Lake there, and then to the right or to the east of Carter Lake is East Omaha, which is Nebraska. But it's Iowa. How did that happen?
Well, what happened was in 1877, the Missouri River changed channels abruptly. Prior to its channelization in the 20th century, the Missouri River flooded every spring and every fall. And as a result of one of those in 1877, it left the 6th district of Council Bluffs on the west side of the Missouri River. And there was some people lost land. There was a Supreme Court case in 1892 between Iowa and Nebraska in which they had decided that the middle of the Missouri River would be the permanent boundary, except two locations, and that would be Council Bluffs, that would be Carter Lake, and then a portion of what is today's Lake Manawa State Park, which in 1881, the river shifted channels and left that on the Iowa side. So you have what are called enclaves, which are two political entities entirely inside this political entity of another sovereign state.
Wait a minute. There's part of Nebraska within Iowa as well?
Not anymore. In 1919, Nebraska ceded that land to Iowa in hopes for reciprocity, with Iowa ceding Carter Lake to Omaha. But because of the Supreme Court case, Iowa said no. Well, in 1919, Carter Lake decided to divorce Council Bluffs and become its own incorporated town. Omaha has been trying to annex Carter Lake roughly every 20 years since the early 1900s. And they continue to, every Omaha mayor, especially when there's gambling brought up, you know, Carter Lake now has a casino, and every time they have brought up the casino effort in the past, then Omaha mayor will say, oh, we'll just annex Carter Lake. And then they come to find out they can't because of the 1892 Supreme Court decision.
That is amazing history. Troy Stolp, the people in the Nebraska side must wonder where in the heck this phrase comes from, Iowa nice, since they didn't return, they didn't give Nebraska Carter Lake after the Lake Manawa area being given back to Iowa. So that's very interesting. What else is connected with this story? I mean, today, so this reverberates, this tension over Carter Lake reverberates to today.
Well, certainly, and it's you know, more, it's a little bit more than that. Early in Carter Lake history, when the river first shifted channels, Omaha was the place that provided Carter Lake with any services, any water, any fire, any police, because at the time there was one railroad bridge connecting Omaha and Council Bluffs. And so it would take any services in Council Bluffs roughly an hour to get over there. And so Omaha was providing all the services, and Carter Lake really desperately wanted to be a part of Omaha. Except Carter Lake, because it had was developed as an industrial location and had it was, in essence, a migrant community. It developed a nightlife complete with brothels and gambling joints that the bigwigs in Nebraska and Omaha would like to attend, and they were often photographed in Carter Lake's Blue District. And because of that, the well-to-do in Omaha started an effort to keep Omaha from annexing Carter Lake when Carter Lake desperately wanted Omaha to annex Carter Lake. So now that after that, there was this idea that Iowa, or that Council Bluffs, was known as what was called Council Tucky by several people in Omaha, and it's that phrase carries to this day. And there was also a time period when people in Council Bluffs would call Omaha their Sin Twister. And so there was always this this animosity during the flooding events. If Omaha became flooded, if a business became flooded, the ironworks in the early 30s flooded in Omaha, and there were articles in the op-ed in the Council Bluffs papers saying that they are Sin Twister, they get everything they deserve, that sort of thing. And all of this animosity, despite the fact that if not for Council Bluffs, there would not be an Omaha.
Right. And tell us that story. We have about 5 minutes left. The founding of Omaha is entwined with the Council Bluffs, right? And it's an interesting story.
That's correct. If you go back to 1854, Stephen Douglas of the famous Douglas-Lincoln debates, and he wanted to organize the Nebraska-Kansas territory because he wanted the Transcontinental Railroad to go through his home state of Illinois, and he had to organize a territory. So he drove that through Congress, who was at that time going through all the slave, not slave states as they entered the territory. So there were all these cross intentions and cross agendas going on, but he got the 1854 Kansas-Nebraska Act to go. And people in Council Bluffs thought if The railroad goes through Illinois. The Transcontinental Railroad goes through Illinois. We want it to go through Council Bluffs.
Mm-hmm.
In order to do that, they thought that the best plan would be for the territorial capital to be right across the river. Omaha didn't exist in 1854 until the spring, when businessmen in Council Bluffs purchased a ferry company from a lone ferry operator, the Omaha and Council Bluffs Ferry, and they started the town of Omaha in 1854. As Omaha became a territory, their first territorial governor, by the name of Francis Burt, came from South Carolina. It took him 2 weeks to get here, and 2 days after he got to the Nebraska Territory, he died. So the new territorial governor was the former territorial secretary by the name of Thomas Cumming, and he was from Keokuk, Iowa.
Hmm.
And as he passed through Council Bluffs, the Council Bluffs businessmen got together and made sure that they gave him plenty of money to make the newly minted town of Omaha into the territorial capital, to ensure that the Transcontinental Railroad went through Council Bluffs and then Omaha. And sure enough, he was worth all the money he got, because despite all the territorial rules, he finagled the census system, and the rules stated at the time that whichever county had the most, or whichever city had the most population, would get the territorial capital. Bellevue, Nebraska, at the time, had by far the highest population. And didn't matter. Omaha got was named territorial capital. The railroad went through there, and as a matter of fact, a couple of counties in southern Nebraska threatened to secede to Kansas over the whole thing. And there's a famous picture of the first territorial legislature in Nebraska where people are hitting each other with chairs and canes and throwing punches. And it's an actual sketch from the first meeting of the territorial legislature. So
wow.
It's quite a story.
Well,
and you know, part of the symbiotic nature of the relationship between Omaha and Council Bluffs.
Does Omaha, the people of Omaha, tell the story that way too? That the way you're telling it, that Omaha was full of corrupt businessmen from Council Bluffs, and that's how their city came to start. That's not the official version, I have to believe.
If people in Omaha talked about the history of Omaha and Council Bluffs, I would be greatly obliged to them. The knowledge of how Omaha began and its Council Bluffs roots are nary a soul will mention those things. So
that's
one of the reasons that I like to give talks, is to remind people about the past. And, you know, right. Omaha Council Bluffs is a metro area.
Okay. I wanted to get to that point. We have just a couple minutes, Troy, but you are really some eye-opening history for all of us, not just in the Omaha Council Bluffs area. What is the reaction? You've given so many of these talks on the history of the area. What do people seem most interested in? I imagine this Carter Lake and the founding of Omaha has got to be high on the list, right? They've been living there perhaps decades, and all of a sudden, what? That happened here?
Well, and that is, you know, and that goes into, you know, one of the larger issues. Local history typically isn't taught in public schools, so it has to be researched. All the local history that I talk about at my talks and that I teach kids, it's not through a class. It's all through my own personal research and my just interest in the subject matter. So everything that I talk about is new to anybody who's gone to school in this area, whether they're from Omaha or from Council Bluffs.
Mm-hmm.
And much of it is, you know, unknown to them. And certainly my area of history are things that, you know, they're not about what rich person lived in this house or that house. It's more about how did things come to be in this area? How did names come about? How did the towns get here? That sort of thing.
Right. And I imagine driving around the area, Troy, you must just see it with com- completely different eyes. You see landmarks in a different way, railroads in a different way. I imagine, right?
Yes, yeah, they're my history lenses, and it's pretty easy to imagine. You know, the buildings are gone. Pretty easy to imagine that the streets are gone, and just, you know, envisioning being able to look from the bluffs on the Iowa side over to the Nebraska side, and, you know, not seeing much of anything and just feeling the wind blow through. That's certainly a hobby of mine.
Okay. When did this hobby passion start for you, Troy?
Probably in 1981, when a neighbor of mine was a local historian, and his name is Frank Smetana, and he wrote the first book on the history of Lake Manawa, and he brought it over to us, and it made great bathroom reading material, and I fell in love with it after that.
We are so glad you did, Troy Stolpe. You're a spring of really interesting history of the area. Troy Stolpe, historian, a teacher at Lewis Central High School in Council Bluffs. You have some lucky students to be in your class, Troy, I have to say.
Well, they get tired of hearing the same stories over and over, and I forget which classes I've told what stories to, so they like to repeat them back to me.
That happens to all of us, by the way, of course, right? Troy Stolpe, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for having me.
River to River is produced by Matt Alvarez, Caitlin Harrop, and Rick Brewer. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Tomorrow, of course, Politics Day. We'll have Dennis Goldford of Drake with us, as well as Tim Hagel of the University of Iowa. Among other things, of course, that Democratic debate tonight will be having analysis on that. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.